people don't understand that if an addict is, and particularly using fentanyl, and they've got one pill left, do you think they're going to use a fentanyl test strip on their last pill?
No.
Of course they're not, because they need that drug in their system.
I'm Flint Anderson, founder of PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need. I've been in recovery since 2001, and there isn't much I don't know about recovery. And my mission is to constantly tell the truth about addiction, to make the realities of addiction, recovery, and drug culture known, and to drive awareness and advocate change that ultimately saves lives.
And I'm Jason LaChance, a certified recovery coach with a passion for speaking with others and sharing their knowledge to help others seek recovery and maintain long-term sobriety. And this is the Don't Hide the Scars podcast, presented by PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need. Thank you for listening either on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts. And please hit that subscribe button if it's your first time. Leave us a rating and a review. Or if you're on YouTube, please subscribe to the channel. Hit the thumb up on the video. Also, click that bell button and get an alert every time we release content. And please leave us a comment. As well, we want to thank all those that have shared the podcast and continue to do so. That's how we continue to grow. And myself and founder of PAIN, Flint Anderson, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Jason. How are you?
I'm good. You know, like you, always fired up about something that's out there.
Yeah, we got a little fired up today.
Well, you have a good job of firing me up. Because I don't realize how, and I'm being serious now, how actually upset and pissed off about certain things that are going on in trying to help people with the addiction crisis. It is a crisis. That their approach, modality, whatever big word you want to use,
is bullshit.
Yeah, just isn't helping anyone.
It's not. There, I don't see anything right now that's doing much help whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been an extremely slow 3 months of virtually nobody out there talking about anything of some substance.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to this. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. For our listeners, let's explain that a little bit. I believe that we are so far past the awareness stage of this mess that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be living on Mars if you haven't heard about the fentanyl epidemic.
Or in a state of denial.
Same thing. And again, I'm not, I really don't want to sit here too much and bash the advocates, but I'm going to bash a little bit.
Sure.
Because all I'm seeing are the occasional, you know, let's give another topic, another talk on substance abuse. Let's give another talk on the importance of Narcan. Let's give another talk on the importance of long-term harm reduction. Instead of attacking the real problem, which is lack of treatment options,
mm-hmm,
for people. Lack, obviously, and that includes places to go. It includes a variety of different what I call life-saving techniques that can actually work.
Yeah.
And I don't get it. I don't get why nobody's talking about it. So guess what? That's what we're going to start doing now again.
Yeah.
Because look, October 7th, Middle East. God, just, I don't even want to go down that road. But because of October 7th, now that is mainstay news.
Yeah.
Fentanyl has taken a back seat.
Yeah.
I mean, almost to the back of the station wagon.
Yeah.
In the discussions.
Yeah.
And what, people just think it's just gone away?
I don't know what that thought process is. I mean, we have two wars going on and not geographically too far away, but I think people are forgetting this war that is going on in every community around the globe almost.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how it's hitting remote parts of certain countries or third world countries. I have no idea. There's no media on that whatsoever.
Right.
Which I find it hard to believe that it to some extent hasn't. But it is pretty sad that it's not been talked about, or when the headlines are still out there. I don't know that dissuasive is the right word. It's never offering any solution either. It's like we can sit and go, the homeless crisis, especially here in California. I don't know about other states. The pricing for housing is astronomical. Yes, all this is true. But then you can go, let's focus on the homeless addict and help them, and we'll get them into some sort of housing. Well, I'm here to tell you that hadn't really worked, because the vast majority of the overdoses are happening at an address.
Right.
And a lot of them are these people that are given some sort of housing, but it's not recovery-based housing.
No, it's not.
They're not being helped through any treatment or any program.
Right.
They might be somebody, they might have a methadone clinic card or whatever else. It's like, when are you going to accept, or the people that are pushing it that way or funding it that way? It's not working. If it was working, why would the death toll continue to rise?
Correct. This is not rocket science. It really isn't. So we have to go back and we have to ask ourselves, why aren't people talking about this?
Yeah.
Why aren't the advocates that were so prevalent, in this last year or two, suddenly aren't around anymore? Why are they continuing to talk about the same thing over and over and over again? Why are people promoting the long-term harm reduction piece to this?
Mm-hmm.
And for those that don't know what we're talking about in that, long-term harm reduction is providing addicts with fentanyl test strips, providing free needles, providing, free housing, free food, free tinfoil, and in some cases, even free drugs.
Yeah, methadone, Suboxone.
Methadone, Suboxone, the actual legal drugs of this.
Yeah.
But what's happening is that we're finding that there are people that have been in long-term recovery that are promoting this long-term harm reduction. Let's keep people on something. They're not.
Yeah.
They're not on long-term harm reduction.
Yeah, there's a real hypocrisy to it that you've really brought this to my attention. I'm baffled that anyone that I know, we know, that's out there that is trying to, it's like being a hitting coach that hit like 200 home runs in the major leagues and could hit the curveball. And then you're trying to teach someone a different way to hit the curveball than how you hit the curveball.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're teaching them, hey, don't worry about if you're pitched a curve. That's not when I want you to use your power. Every other type of pitch, use your power. But on the curveball, let's just try to get a single out of it.
Yeah.
It's like, no, come on, swing for the fences on this.
Right. I've got a couple of reasons why I think some of these people are doing this.
Sure.
And there are people out there that are in the treatment industry.
Mm-hmm.
And let's face facts. And I'm going to call it like I see it. When somebody is promoting long-term harm reduction and they're in the treatment industry, and I'm in the treatment industry, I have a treatment center. These people have a permanent client.
Right.
Because there's going to be relapse. There's going to be a time when hopefully they would want to get off the methadone or the Suboxone. And the only way that person's going to be able to do it is to go back into a treatment facility. And now that treatment facility has their hooks in them already. So this is also a business decision on a lot of these people's parts that I truly believe. The other side to this are the people that have lost children to this. And it's horrific. And both you and I know, we know plenty of these people that have lost kids to this, and our hearts go out to them. How could our hearts not go out to them? But by the way, not all parents that have lost kids believe this, but a lot of them believe if they just would have kept their kid on something like a Suboxone or a methadone, they would still be here.
Sure.
That is not necessarily true.
No. And New Perceptions North, the premier drug and alcohol treatment and recovery center in Central California. A full continuum of medically supervised top quality care with programs for detox and patient residential treatment with dual diagnosis, intensive outpatient treatment, sober living support groups, and more. New Perceptions North provides adult men and women with the highest caliber of professional health care, treating each client with compassion and respect. In a safe, comfortable environment to begin the process of recovery, to proudly create and sustain a life without addiction. Call 559-978-1507 or visit newperceptionsnorth.com.
We try to quantify unquantifiable factors because you and I have seen it. We see it here in this the city we record, Fresno. I see it in the city I live or near it, Merced, California, where people go to the methadone clinic, to show up early in the morning. And when they do so, it's also a really good time for the dealers to be just
you
around the corner. So there, you know, there's so many people that are supplementing additional, we just saw it, with the celebrity.
Of course. But let me say this. One of the reasons why we're talking about this, and because we know these things, is because I did those things.
Right.
This isn't, I'm just not, you know, you and I aren't sitting here just making this crap up.
Right.
This is a part of it. These people don't understand that if an addict is and particularly using fentanyl and they've got one pill left, do you think they're going to use a fentanyl test strip on their last pill?
No.
Of course they're not, because they need that drug in their system.
Yeah.
Those are the things that aren't being discussed. But then again, let's say they are. Let's finally say, okay, where are we going to send these people?
Yeah.
We don't have enough places to send them. We can't handle that many people. How sad is that? In the United States, we can't handle the people that are addicted to the point of their only hope is the fact that they need treatment.
Yeah.
End of story.
Do you think that the long-term harm reduction in many ways, without blatantly saying it, is an admittance of that response? Like, hey, the reality is we don't have enough places for these people to go, let alone to get help.
Maybe.
So hopefully this will prevent them from a lethal overdose.
That's what they think.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like,
and all they're doing is slowing the process.
Yeah.
They're just slowing the
process. Because if there's nothing accessible to them today, why do you think 2 weeks from now there's all of a sudden going to be in that moment of clarity?
Correct. Correct. You know, it's look, there is so much of this that is disturbing to me. We seem to get ahead of steam for a while. And then all of a sudden, for whatever reasons, the brakes are put on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's two steps forward, 10 steps backwards. Every time we're dealing with addiction issues, right when you think there might be a little bit of change in Sacramento, nope, something else comes in from right field and knocks us right on our ass again. You know, I go back to Tom Wolf. I go back with him, you know, and explaining to us that San Francisco has a $569 million annual budget for substance use disorder and mental health. And there's 57 beds, all right, in San Francisco to try to help over 25,000 practicing drug addicts on those streets. Where's the money?
Yeah.
Why aren't people talking about that? Why aren't people saying, whether it's Fresno County, San Francisco, Sacramento, Tulare County, Kern County, I don't care where it is, LA County, where's the money going?
Yeah. I think it's always a follow the money situation. At least with this, it clearly has been.
Of course. And look, we continue to talk about this stuff. And we need to continue to talk about it. I know we've addressed this plenty of times on this podcast,
mm-hmm.
you know, but we need to keep addressing it. But I do believe we are now at a point where we need to look. We're not idiots sitting here, but we need to be able to get to the people that are running the city of San Francisco, running these county programs, and just point blank asking them, "Where's the money?"
Yeah. Yeah, you would think Mrs. Mayor, where's the accountability? What is it? Where is it going? I mean, at the end of the day, you look at it like a city of San Francisco or LA.
Right.
Whose policies do you think created this?
Of course. Again, there's so much time wasted on these, I'm losing the name of it. The organizations that are going out and they're having these meetings at college campuses, whatever they are, to break the stigma of addiction. Jesus Christ Almighty. Okay. I mean, the stigma of addiction, first of all, it's always going to be there. It's always going to be there. I don't care what society you come from or you live in. That stigma is always going to be there. We have done an amazing job of breaking that stigma down over this last 3 or 4 years. We really have, because this isn't just about, and again, I'm not putting anybody down particularly, but it's just not about the bum on the street. Yeah. It's just not about the homeless person, because there's so many people affected by fentanyl that crosses all barriers, all races, all nationalities, all everything. But my God, okay, we've established all this.
Yeah.
What's the next step here?
Yeah.
What is the next step? I mean, I kind of know what the next step is. It's getting everybody off their ass and everybody becoming truthful here.
Yeah.
And going, okay, yeah, you know what? It's just like when Newsom moved everybody, all those street people off the streets of San Francisco when China's president showed up.
Yeah, it was a summit overall. I guess there was right? many other leaders, but yeah,
right?
moved them. Moved them in
less than a week.
Yeah. And put them behind a wall, people.
By the way, behind a wall. Yes, yeah. They did. All right. But my point here is that we can do anything we want.
Yeah.
And we can do it well.
Yeah.
And we can do it fast.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't need to be dragging everything out like we are dragging it out right now.
Yeah.
So again, where are the people that we can actually get an answer out of? How does that change come about? You, me, the pain organization, we're only going to be able to take this thing so far.
Yeah.
But I'm going to ask you another question.
Okay.
Why is it, and you and I, we've reached out to people. Why is it that the most of the people that are working in this, call it industry, are almost afraid to band together to really go and attack something the proper way? I don't mean standing there with signs, okay, and wife beater t-shirts on, all right, and making assholes out of yourself by marching up and down the streets. I'm talking about straight on conversation, making a point, getting our message across to these folks. I don't get it. Is it just everybody's worried about their own little world and their own little corner of it and their own little slice of it?
I think, yes, I think it does have to do with the own little slice. And you know as well as anybody, so many people in this area of work do not play well together for whatever reason.
I just wanted you to say it.
I don't know. I do. It's
they don't work and play well with others.
Yeah, and it's hard for me because I don't understand it because I don't think that way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard for me to really understand. Like I've had some situations lately, not necessarily surrounding the work we do, but where there was like an accusation or an assumption, and it's like, yeah, that's not what's happening or going on because, hey, I don't even think that way. And it's a good amount of that. Or maybe there's people that they are so much on the other side. They're in their bubble doing the work, like hustling, like, you know, you work a lot. I work a lot, you know, that they don't even know how to make new connections, reach out, see there's no forum to that has made it clear and available that, hey, this is what we're about. Are you about this too? How can we work together? You know, right. Not just between cities, but states and nationally, you know?
Right.
So I wish I had a better answer.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a pretty good answer, actually. It's just frustrating. Is what it is.
If you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, please call PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need, at 559-579-1551 or visit us online at painnonprofit.org. Follow us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at PAIN Nonprofit. And please subscribe to the Don't Hide the Scars podcast and share with others wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. And if you would like to donate to PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need, please click the link in the description to make your tax-deductible donation today and help us save more lives gripped by addiction.
Because we see it, we're in this every single day. And like anything else, when you don't see any light at the end of that tunnel, most of us, if we just see that little glimmer, that gives us the ability, it gives us the drive to move forward and to keep pushing ahead and to try to get things done. But when it's just total darkness at the end of that tunnel, I'll tell you, man, sometimes it's hard to get my ass up in the morning, all right, to go and get in the fight again.
Yeah.
You know?
It's disheartening.
It's extremely disheartening. And then to hear people that are in this field even thinking that they just want to keep somebody trapped in that long-term harm reduction third circle of hell. Because that's what it is.
And now I want to bring this up. I don't mean to cut you off, but the relevance that you have on this, I don't have any experience with harm reduction personally, but you do.
You bet your ass.
2 years of methadone.
You bet your ass.
And that continued hell.
Slave.
Yeah.
I was a slave to it, right? Like any other drug, it builds a tolerance. So you're going to have more and more,
yeah.
You know, it's that that's what I'm not understanding. It's like none of these people understand these things are narcotics. We're given a narcotic to a narcotic addict and expecting them to live normal lives. Now, and again, I will not disagree with this. There are some people out there that have been on long-term methadone use. And they're doing fine. But I got to tell you, out of all the people I've seen over the last 15 years, it's only on two hands that I can count these people. But what they're not telling you is they're not telling you the side effects and the potential health risks of methadone, of Suboxone, as they get older.
Mm-hmm.
Because none of that is being shared with the public.
No, no. Oh, well, even if you know, my area of expertise, alcohol, you know, I've had conversations with friends that have wanted to, you know, sober curious or whatever, you know, I'm like, dude, you're over 40. Like, would you like all the actual data, the reality of it all? And how bad it is for your body as you continue to age, especially once you hit 40.
Yeah.
That's about the peak of when hormonal changes for sure are starting to happen and all these different factors in your life. What you're do you want to have bone density problems?
Right.
Do you want to have liver and kidney issues?
Do you want to have bowel issues?
People leave that one out.
They leave that one out. You bet.
What about your cognitive ability?
Right.
Do you have Alzheimer's running your family?
Right. Right.
You know, it's so many heart issues.
Right.
So it all comes with a consequence. And consequence is not being spoken about.
It's not being spoken about. And again, these people that are having these summits, I've been to those summits. I've put people in those summits to know exactly what is being said in those things. Mm-hmm. They don't even have Q&A afterwards for people to ask questions. Because we had people in there, I'll say it, we had people in there ready to ask these people questions to see if they even could even give an answer. They couldn't even give an answer.
Right.
They wouldn't even respond to it. Why wouldn't they? That's because A, they don't know their okay, from a stick in their hand. I'm sorry. Okay. Well, I mean, I'm that pissed off today. Okay.
Well, we kind of call it what it is.
Right. Right. I mean, how do you go in and present somewhere and not have all the facts?
Yeah.
It boggles the mind.
Or even to factually state something along the, I mean, methadone's been around since what, the 40s?
Yeah, 40s, 50s. Yeah.
40s, 50s. Okay. Well, what about Suboxone?
It's been around probably since, I want to say mid 90s.
Okay.
Late 90s.
So, you know, I'm wondering what the data is on that compared to methadone, but it's like,
Present that. By the way, up until 3 years ago, most doctors didn't even know what Suboxone was.
Oh, yeah.
They had no clue.
It seemed to really spike during the pandemic.
It did. You bet. You did, because everything was shut down.
Right.
Everything was shut down. You couldn't go to meetings. You couldn't go anywhere. People are relapsing like there's no tomorrow. And all of a sudden, boom, Suboxone makes the big ass comeback. Yeah, it's been around a while.
Hmm.
You know, so again, these people are just not offering the full picture of any of this. And I just want to know why.
Yeah.
I just want to know why.
Yeah.
You know? When so again, what we're going to be doing here, all right, is and we just started it out with Danny, our last guest. We're going to be having addicts in here talking about this and talking about the time that they wasted let me go down the Suboxone road. Let me go down the methadone road. Let me go down this road and that road and all the other roads. All right. And because people need to understand and hear from, and these are young guys. These aren't old men.
Mm-hmm.
These are 25-year-olds that have that it almost seems like if when you hear their stories, it's like they've been in this for 20 years. And yeah, that's basically how they look too.
Sure.
You know, because these drugs do not, they do not, what's the word I'm trying to think of here? They don't make your skin color better. They don't make you feel better. It's a goddamn narcotic.
Yeah.
So it has the same effect as a regular opioid does.
Yeah.
So again, there it is. I mean, it's, and we're going to push this. And I'll tell you what, anybody's out there listening, and if they want to come in and debate us on this issue, come on in,
yeah.
Right? We'll debate, we'll talk, we'll do it all, because something's got to break here.
Yeah.
Something's got to break. I mean, look, we just can't keep going down the same road. You know, and again, it's that old saying, the definition of insanity, right? And we all know all too well about that one.
I mean, for all of us 12-step peoples, one of the foundational principles is that we will be restored to sanity.
Right, right. And here it is, you know.
Yeah. Well, and one other thing that I want to hit on here before we wrap up is I've had it recently and you've had it recently too. The conversations, though, about, you know, the cost of treatment and that. Oh, there's, you know, they're just after money and blah, 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 blah. And that's a little myopic, not understanding the overall and full picture. Why? Yes, of course, there are some facilities. That is what it is. But people don't really understand the cost to the facility the second you walk in the door.
Oh, yeah.
Between intake, the doctor that has to be there.
Yeah.
You know, it's and that's why I say it's a little myopic, a little one-sided.
It is. You know, again, people, when But I do have to start by saying this. There are two types of treatment. And one, obviously, mm-hmm. is for the client that has the PPO insurance or has the cash that can afford it. And the other one, of course, is the government or Medi-Cal. And so there is a huge price difference in all of that. But you have, but again, where's the money? Because you've got the county programs over here that have millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars that are supporting them, their treatment facilities. You've got the private side over here that doesn't get funded by government money. So that means we either have to pull it out of our own pocket, or we've got to get loans, or we've got to do whatever it takes to keep our businesses going. And then, of course, betting on the insurance company that they're not going to screw us too bad.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good luck with that one.
All right.
Okay, because that's the insurance company's job now, all right, is to make sure that they spend as little money as possible
sure.
on treatment for somebody.
So a lot of it's regulatory related. So let me ask you this. To your knowledge, then, does the privately run facility and the government, public, whatever you want to call it, have some of the same? Are they the regulatory principles the same?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, you bet. Yeah, you have to have certain licensing. You have to have certain accreditations, certain, obviously state licensing. You bet. And sometimes, actually, the government-run treatment centers could even be more stringent.
Mm.
When you're dealing with Medi-Cal, for example, I've never seen a slower moving machine in my entire life than the California Medi-Cal system. Yeah. It literally is at a snail's pace that is helping no one,
mm-hmm.
to be honest with you, because there's so many rules and regulations. There's so many different regulatory things that need to be done that it can take 3 to 4 years just to get approved to accept Medi-Cal. Why?
Right.
Why?
Right.
You know, you've got judges that are you get a substance abuser that maybe stole a car, whatever the case may be, right? And that judge sentences him or her to an outpatient program. Do you know it's going to take a minimum from the time that judge sentences that individual? It's going to take anywhere from 40 to 60 days before that person gets into an outpatient treatment program, not even a residential, outpatient treatment program in certain counties in the state of California.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, so where's the, what good is the service?
Yeah.
If the service isn't being provided.
Good old red tape.
Ooh,
huh?
It's yeah. And I'll tell you what, it's thick.
It's yeah. And it's sad because it just, the powers of be, whoever, whatever you want to throw, they're just so uneducated about it. And it doesn't seem they've taken the time to really educate themselves and understand and to really go, we've got such a small window. They're here. Do you really want to help? Well, then we've got to figure out a way to fast track isn't even the right word. It just make the have accessibility there when the opportunity presents and bam.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up because as that relates to fentanyl, if you're a heroin addict, you can be a heroin addict for 30 years, barring any disaster, you know, an overdose that whatever the case may be. You can be a long-term pill head. You can be a long-term cocaine addict. You got about an 11, 12 month window being addicted to fentanyl.
Yeah.
At most.
Yeah.
At most. Some people say 2 years. I don't think so.
Yeah, I've heard 2 years, 18 months, but
yeah.
I mean,
so you're talking about the fast track.
Yeah.
Look, we can't drag our ass on this thing any longer.
No.
And if I have to hear one more person say, you know, they have to really want it. the older I get, I'm starting to really take a look at some of these statements that are made out there. Okay. There are drug users out on the streets. I'm telling you right now, I was one.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want it.
Mm.
Okay. Nobody wants to crap themselves. Nobody wants to sleep on a cold grate, right? On a freezing ass night. You know, nobody wants to sleep outside in the heat when it's 110, you know. But we're not offering somebody any of the services that are going, but the right services. I'm just not talking about here's a card, walk in, get something and go. I'm talking about the right services.
Yeah. And if you want to reduce this, as so many people have, the decriminalization element of it, well, here you go.
Well, I think we have.
You get some, well, yeah, they have, but it's not presented any more opportunity is what I'm saying.
I understand.
Like, okay, so I didn't get busted for stealing the $40 from the worth of stuff from the convenience store. I didn't get arrested. They just let me go or whatever it was. And I was able to turn. It's not helping.
Right.
That's my point. Is it's not helping.
I know.
Like, hey, yeah, I'm all up for giving someone that normally would be a felony count of possession or whatever the heck it is. I forget what amount you have to be at now. Right. And most addicts definitely can't afford that, but whatever it is, as long as it's, you know, you're not having actually, you know, harmed, hurt, maimed or whatever, like, okay, let's get him a chance and get him out there and maybe in a work program. I see it in my local town and many of these young men and women that have had these issues and they're getting back out there and they're building a life. Okay. I get that side of it, but it's like, come on.
Right.
You're not presenting. The end of the day, they're in a dark cave, and you're not giving any of us that want to help a flashlight, let alone some good batteries.
Absolutely.
Because that's what it is. You got to shine a light.
Got to shine a light.
Like, show the potential, and here's, you know, I'm not going to hold your hand out of the cave, but hey, here it is.
Right.
And then eventually, you're going to hold the flashlight for yourself.
Sure. But along those lines, I would be remiss if I didn't say this. There are people out there that I'm sad to say they're never coming back.
Yeah.
They're never coming back from it.
Yeah.
And is that something that we blame the individual? Do we blame society? Do we put any blame at all? Yeah, I think blame needs to go all the way around on that one. Because there reaches a point, although I have seen many miracles in the years of my recovery and in the years of doing this, but there does reach a point with individuals that they're not coming back. Because the brain has been affected to the point of no return.
Yeah.
You know, and that's when I talk about wasted life, that's what I'm talking about there. You know, so we better get off our ass. We better stop the little summits that are going on here and going on there. Okay. To make everybody feel good. All right. And to say, look at me and look what I'm doing. Right. No, let's roll up the sleeves. Let's get into it, and see what we can do. I mean, that's what it's coming down to. It's not coming down to anything else. It's like anything else. You put the work in, you're gonna succeed.
Yeah.
If you don't put the work in, it's gonna go nowhere.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just trying to get results passively.
Yep.
Anything else, Mr. Anderson?
No, I think that pretty much sums it up for the day.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to the Don't Hide the Scars podcast. Of course, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you can leave ratings and reviews there. It definitely helps us climb up, get a little more notoriety. And if you are checking us out on YouTube, hey, hit that subscribe button. Click the thumb up. Also, ring the bell. I love that sound effect.
Ring the bell.
And you will get notifications whenever we release new content on Pain, Parents, and Addicts in Need's YouTube channel. So thank you again, Mr. Anderson. Thank you.
Mr. LeChance, as always, thank you. Appreciate you, man.
If you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, please call PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need, at 559-579-1551 or visit us online at painnonprofit.org. Follow us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at PAIN Nonprofit. And please subscribe to the Don't Hide the Scars podcast and share with others wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. And if you would like to donate to PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need, please click the link in the description to make your tax-deductible donation today and help us save more lives gripped by addiction.